Like under 5'4".
I'm starting out at 5'2". I got nothing.
Like we're different heights from the morning to the afternoon. Too.
Could
my
be.
Kids are.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, science.
That's science.
Cool.
Good morning. I call the meeting of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee to order. It is Monday, June the 23rd at 9:30 a.m. Diego, can you please call the roll?
Good morning. Cuyama Lane.
Here.
Murillo.
Here.
Green.
Present.
Smith.
Here.
Clark.
Here. And Christopher, can you please read the statement of conduct?
Welcome to the meeting of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. To testify before this committee in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance in the agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda/transportation-and-infrastructure-committee or by calling 311. Information on engaging with the committee can be found at this link. Registration for virtual testimony closes 1 hour prior to the meeting. In-person testifiers must sign up before the agenda item is heard. If public testimony will be taken on an item, individuals may testify for 3 minutes unless the chair states otherwise. Your microphone will be muted when your time is over. The chair preserves order. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or committee deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, the committee may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. If you are a lobbyist, identify the organization you represent. Virtual testifiers should unmute themselves when the clerk calls your name. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. So colleagues, today we have two items on our agenda. The first, we're going to hear an ordinance regarding a street vacation at Southeast Oak Street near Laurelhurst Park. And then we're going to go into a long-awaited deep dive into transportation system planning and hear about how our city plans align with community and regional planning efforts. So, Diego, can you please read the first item?
Item one, vacate a portion of Southeast Oak Street between Southeast 37th Ave and Southeast Cesar Chavez Boulevard, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Thank you. So this ordinance comes to us from PBOT, and I'm going to hand it off to the PBOT team to get us started to discuss the vacation.
Good morning, Chair Clark and members of the committee. This is Priya Dhanapal, DCA for Public Works, and we have before you a street vacation for a small section of Southeast Oak Street that bisects the Laurelhurst Park. Street vacation relinquishes our interest in this right-of-way, and that interest transfers to the adjacent property owners, which in this case is Portland Parks and Recreation. We have with us PBOT's right-of-way agent, Jean Yamamoto, to quickly walk us through the presentation and answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, DCA Dhanapal. So, Mr. Yamamoto, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, good morning, counselors. My name's Jean Yamamoto from the PBOT Real Property Services Division. I'm here to present on the Southeast Oak Street street vacation. With me, I have Dave McElDowney, who's the division manager for PBOT Real Property Services, along with Lauren McGuire, who's the Parks and Recreation Assets and Development Division Manager. So here's the street vacation area. It's on this section of Southeast Oak Street between Southeast 37th Avenue and Cesar Chavez Boulevard. It's in the Laurelhurst neighborhood next to Laurelhurst Park, which is in District 3 in East Portland. Just a little bit of background on the street vacation process and what we've done so far. This is a city-initiated street vacation, which followed a directive from Mayor Wheeler's office. The petitioner is Portland Parks and Recreation, which means that should a street vacation be approved at City Council next month, the street area would be absorbed into the abutting portions of Laurelhurst Park. We presented the street vacation at the Portland Planning Commission in June of last year, where it was unanimously approved by the commissioners there. And then as part of the street vacation protocols laid out in ORS 271, ahead of the council hearing next month, we have published notices in the Daily Journal of Commerce, posted physical notification signs in the street vacation area, and then sent out notification letters to the neighbors in the affected area. Here's a quick view of all the parks equipment that's already been installed in the street area. Going from right to left, the numbered sections are the pump track. In the middle, you can see the skate ramp, and then on the left, the two pickleball courts. The blue rectangles on either end of the street area show the temporary barricades that have been put up to prevent cars from turning into the street area. Here's some photos of what you just saw on the plan view. So at the top, you have the two pump track sections. The bottom right is the skate ramp. And then you have one of the two pickleball courts in the bottom left. And these are the two entrances to Southeast Oak Street that I just spoke about. So on the left is the Southeast 37th side. You can see those three circular blockers. Those are removable, so city maintenance vehicles can have access to the area. And then on the right is the Cesar Chavez side. Again, removable barriers, but this side will be permanently closed off using a sidewalk and curb. Before we jump into those, maybe we can jump in.
Sure. So Lauren McGuire, Asset Development Division, Portland Parks and Recreation. Just wanted to let you know that our choice in recreation activities was balancing maximum activation for the area during the open park hours and what we could find quickly. We chose, as Jean noted, the pickleball and skate park ramp and then the off-road cycling features off the shelf, all of which we looked at our level of service, and that's how we determined what activities would be appropriate. So combining all those things together, we also have the benches and the bike parking for viewing and for transportation.
Perfect. So with the closure of both sides of Southeast Oak Street, that means we have a certain amount of bike and pedestrian traffic that's being diverted onto the sidewalk that runs currently on the south side of Southeast Oak Street. To ensure that folks still have a corridor to be able to bike through this area and not have to divert onto any parallel streets, the plan is to expand the existing Laurelhurst Park path that runs just to the north of the street vacation area. We'll widen this path to 12 feet and then add a right angle connector for bikes at the Southeast 37th side. The park will also allow for 24/7 access through these two paths to ensure that folks can move through there at all times of day. So with that, that concludes the presentation. We're happy to answer any additional questions that you might have.
All right, thank you so much. Diego, has anyone signed up to testify today?
We have one individual signed up to testify.
Great. Would you call that person up?
Stephen Fisher.
Sure. Hi, Gabby.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chair Clark and committee members, and a special thank you to our District 3 council members, Murillo and Kayoma Lane. My name is Stephen Fisher. I'm appearing here as chair of the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association Land Use and Transportation Committee. I'm here to speak in support of the transfer of land on a small portion of Southeast Oak Street from PBOT to the Parks Department, which provides Laurelhurst Park with pickleball courts, skateboard ramps, and a bicycle track, all of which are heavily used in this much-loved park in Southeast. There's a letter in your packet from the Neighborhood Association also expressing support. The only thing I would add to this letter is that it is really difficult to find new park opportunities in District 3 for these types of activities. And this action is fairly easy and a small action that goes to address one of the main District 3 priorities as per a recently completed survey by Southeast Uplift to add new park facilities within District 3. Lastly, I would be remiss if I didn't thank the many city staff who weighed in on this process. And this is a long process, and I'd like to also acknowledge the support of two former commissioners on the old council, Council Member Rubio, who had the Parks Department at that time, and Council Member Commissioner Hardesty, who had PBOT back at that time. Once again, I urge you to support this measure. Thanks.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to us today. Really appreciate it, representing the Laurelhurst neighborhood. Is there anyone else?
That concludes testimony.
Oh, thank you. Colleagues, do we have any discussion, any questions for the panel? I do. All right. I'm just curious, since we have a parks representative, how did you decide to put the skate park and pickleball in? What was your process?
So it was quick. We looked at our level of service, as I noted a little bit earlier, which is where we look at the facilities that are available throughout the city and look for areas where there is a need for those facilities. And that's how we determined what we would put in there. So combination of what we need and what the community was looking for to activate their area.
So how do you know what we need? Is there a survey or what
people do? Our planning department has done extensive process, which we called at that time the level of service, which was looking at 13 different assets in our system. And we talked to the community about how far they would go to each asset. So we have mapping of all those different assets, and it shows how far they would go to walk to a park, for example, half a mile to a park. And then as we map those in GIS, you can see areas where there are needs for people to have additional parks in order to meet that.
Great. Thank you for explaining that. I think some of us are very new, and it's interesting to learn how you make those determinations. I appreciate that. And this is apparently, obviously, a very thorough, long process. Appreciate all your work on that. So, colleagues, if we don't have any other questions, Councillor?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. How long is the process? Like, typically, from the concept of inception until you bring it to council, how long does that take for this sort of thing?
Hi, David McElDaney with PBOT. I can jump in on that. So the street vacation action, which is separate than any of the parks facility issues, it's based out of ORS, and so there's a very prescriptive route we have to follow. This one is actually a little faster than a typical street vacation. They could last up to 2 or 3 years, depending on the complexity and the number of streets being vacated. But this is a city-initiated vacation, which kicks the public process more towards the back end. And so typically about a year for that process.
So would you say that if the city was interested in doing a lot more of these, we would look at like maybe a year would be the kind of the shortest feasible time frame that we could pull something like this off?
It really depends on the complexity and who's involved. In this case, the city owned the property on each side and made it very simple. And we would also be able to manage the utilities in the future that are currently in the street. There's other places where it could be faster just because of being a paper street, not a developed street per se, one that's has never had a street on it or no utilities. It could be faster, okay. But typically about a year.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Councillor Green. I think I know where you're going with this. I think in the future, we're going to be wanting to look at the future of streets. Those that are underutilized that maybe could be turned into other kinds of assets. So I appreciate that question.
You know how my brain cooks.
I know by now how your brain works. Any other questions from District 3? Did you have a question? Councillor Coyamaline.
Thank you so much for being here today. I know my 8-year-old and 9-year-old really love those pickleball courts. I don't think they're actually playing real pickleball, but in their mind, they're they're doing some version of it. This is just a really creative way to meet the needs of community members. And I have taught at Sunnyside Environmental School, so took my students there often. And we also studied the history of the park. And so it was great to learn that that playground wasn't originally part of the park until there was advocacy around that. And that's kind of why it is separately added on. And so this just seems like it's fits in with that history. I'm wondering if you can summarize any feedback you've gotten from community regarding any concerns that have popped up. I see that PBOT has required some conditions for approval. So maybe those are connected there and have been dealt with. But if you could give us any summary of, has there been pushback? Has there been feedback around concerns at all?
Yeah, so as part of the public process, obviously, you know, we've gone out and talked with the neighbors. I've also presented at the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association meeting a couple years ago. We haven't received any concerns, even with posting all these notices, you know, the DJC out in the neighborhood. You know, we've seen folks kind of posting on the internet about this and having conversations, which is great, but we haven't received any formal complaints or concerns.
Great. Any other questions? All right, I would entertain or like to entertain a motion to have the ordinance document number 2025-247 be sent to the full council with a recommendation that it be passed.
So moved.
Second.
Great. We have councilors moving the ordinance seconding it to be sent to the full council with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, any further discussion? Seeing none, then I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Kayama Lane.
Aye.
Murillo.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Smith. Not sure if you can hear us, Councillor Smith online. Clark.
Aye.
With 4 aye votes, the ordinance is referred to the full council with a due pass recommendation.
Terrific. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here today, and especially our neighborhood representative. We appreciate your time and your thorough process. Diego, can you please read the next item?
Item 2, overview of transportation system planning.
Thank you. So, colleagues, this item comes to us. We've asked our PBOC colleagues to provide an overview of transportation system planning, including city, regional, and community neighborhood level plans. You know, Portland has been known for its planning, its urban planning. Starting back with Senate Bill 100, we have a long history of planning in this state and in this community. And it includes planning for housing, planning for citizen engagement, planning and transportation. So we really wanted to have a better understanding of those layers of planning and how we got to this place. And we appreciate your helping us kind of decipher that whole process from state to regional to local to the neighborhood level. So I think that we have DCA Dana Paul again to open this up, and then Art Pierce, PBOT Planning Programs and Project Deputy Director, with us.
Thank you, Chair Clark. Good morning, everybody. For the record, once again, this is Priya Dana Paul, Deputy City Administrator and Public Works. Thank you for having PBOT provide you an overview of the transportation system planning that the city engages in. Chair Clark, this is a timely opportunity as the Bureau is in the midst of launching the public engagement process for the update of the 2045 transportation system plan later this week. And as you all may be aware, under Oregon's Land Use and Transportation Planning Regulatory Framework, transportation system plan, often referred to as a TSP, is required by state law to guide the city's transportation policies and investments over a 20-year period. A component of the city's comprehensive plan, the TSP, is the city's overarching document on transportation policy and major capital projects. And the TSP must also be consistent with the latest regional transportation plan maintained by Metro. PBOT also conducts ongoing area corridor and modal planning to deep dive into particular areas and to inform future TSP updates. Art Pierce, PBOT's Deputy Director for Planning, Programs, and Projects, will be grounding you in the what, why, and how of transportation system planning. Thank you again for the opportunity to engage with the committee on this timely and important work, and we look forward to working with the council as the 2045 TSB update unfolds. Over to you, Art.
Thank you, DCA Dhanapal. Art, good to have you here.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Again, Art Pierce, Deputy Director of Planning Projects and Programs here at PBOT. Thank you for taking the time to go into a little bit of a deeper dive into transportation system planning and the transportation system plan itself. We broke the presentation into three steps, why, what, and how. So, you know, why are we doing this? How is the transportation system plan and the regional transportation plan set up? And then what are we doing and how will we be collaborating with you and community on updating the transportation system plan? So actually one of the reasons why I pursued this as a career 27 years ago, which is a long time ago, was realizing how much transportation planning and the transportation network itself is so integral to access to opportunity and the flow and functioning of our city in general. And so I think it's just important for us to remember that the direct movement that we experience of our commute is just one piece of how a transportation system is designed and the implications of doing it well or not doing it well. Particularly access to opportunity. This is how people get to work, to school, to their to visit family, to worship. It is also in part of our core requirements that the system is designed safely and that people are able to navigate the system safely regardless of how they choose to get around. It is also important to note that the transportation sector makes up about 43% of our carbon emissions in this region, and so is very a large contributor to climate change and our climate adaptation. And public health is related to that as well. Emissions and the instances of public health are experienced differently in different parts of the city. It is also important to note that overall household budget includes both housing and transportation. So if we are able to make transportation more affordable, that is has a key attribute towards people being able to continue to afford their housing. It's also important to note if we are putting funds into building structured vehicle parking, for instance, that can be $50,000, even $80,000 per unit, per parking space, that should be spent, both the space and the money should be spent on housing people and not on cars. And so we need to be able to make a system that is less reliant on that need. Goods movement, while is a relatively smaller part of our overall transportation mobility, is often caught in the crossfire and is not able to get its goods delivered on time and affordably if they're caught in many hours of congestion. And then lastly, we have a constant choice about how we use our space, with the public right-of-way being 30% of our overall land area, all owned by the public sector, about how we want to use that space, whether we want to use it for storing cars and mobility or use it for creating public space. So those are constantly dynamics.
Art, can I interrupt you just for a second?
Of course.
You dive much deeper into the TSP, could you tell us, is this also a requirement that we do this on the part of the state? Where does that...
Yes, for sure. So yeah, I'll go into the specifics of the TSP and the RTP, but we do have both federal and state requirements for compliance. Absolutely. And I've got a slide in a moment. I'll get there. Just to make sure that we are really grounded in this, people experience the transportation system differently. For instance, 27% of Black households in Portland do not have access to a car compared to just 13% of white households. And also the time spent commuting can be 20% longer for BIPOC Portlanders. This matters to people's daily time that they can spend with their families, whether they're making it to work on time. All those things are of critical import. It is also really important to note that the provision of vehicle transportation consumes not just road space, but land space. For instance, from 1933 to 1960, you can see the number of buildings that were torn down to make surface parking in our avid pursuit during those years to accommodate vehicle growth. We know that that is not what's best for the city, and we have changed course, but it is, I think, a stark reminder that many of those surface lots are still exist today, and we're still working our way out of that trend. Transportation planning is inherently very, very complex, and one of the reasons is we're always building off of an existing land use and infrastructure pattern. And we're trying to change the way that the land use and transportation system interact. The way that we have the built environment set up changes the travel demands and how far you need to travel, what is convenient to travel. All those things matter. If a grocery store is 5 miles away, it's very hard to do that through a short walk with a tow behind cart. If there's a grocery store nearby, if we're attending to food inequities, those things will actually help with transportation equities. We're always working on these sort of trade-offs within the transportation system. And I think it's important to note that the transportation system, while being overseen by PBOT and overseen by you all as council members, is actually co-created by all of us on a daily basis. The choice that we make in terms of how we choose to get around, the speed we drive, the amount of space that we're taking, all of those things has an implication for others that are also trying to get to where they need to go. And so each time we decide to take the bus that day, we're making a contribution to the overall system benefit, leaving space for someone that doesn't have that option quite as readily. As Chair Clark iterated, PBOT and Oregon has been on the vanguard of transportation system planning for many years. Really starting back in the 1970s, at the same time there was a lot of statewide land use goals established, the beach bill, all those various things. This was a time in which Oregon was really shifting its focus from focusing on vehicle travel to really focusing on creating a balanced transportation system, really emphasizing walking, cycling, and transit as our key modes that we want to have safe and accessible for everyone. As I already stated earlier, this is a goal to create thriving places, emphasizing and supporting the land use development pattern that already exists within Portland and the places that we want to see growth happen. And so you'll see in the highlights, those are the various designated centers within Portland. And then you can see the key corridors. And this is showing the investments and how they match up with those key centers and corridors where we want to create thriving, accessible, welcoming places. We are also very conscious, particularly at this point, about reducing the impact that we have on the system. And as I know you've already had a lot of good conversations around Vision Zero, continue to be striving in a safe system approach to make sure that we are attending to everyone's mobility needs. We've also done some interesting studies looking at how we can convert our transportation space to emphasize the moving of people. For instance, this is one location where we filmed the number of vehicles, the number of pedestrians and cyclists, and noted that in just 6 buses, we were treating and moving the same number of people as 241 cars. So, If we're mindful about using our space effectively, we can have a large impact on the mobility of our space. But there's trade-offs and choices inherent in that. It's also important, as I noted a little bit already, that we're always focusing on helping people shift their patterns as the city is growing and adapting. And so we have all these great programs that are lifted up within the transportation system plan that are now also part of PBOT's program strategy, such as Safe Routes to School or a transportation wallet. But always helping people. And then, of course, Sunday Parkways, which is one of everyone's favorites. PBOT is also a great partner in using all of our land area to help remedy urban heat island. And we have new programs such as curbs, trees in the curb zone, as well as partnerships with the Bureau of Environmental Services and Urban Forestry of adding more and more tree canopy into our street areas. PBOT is also continuing to look at our transportation assets and wondering which of them can become community places. And with the overall ethic that Portland needs many living rooms all throughout the city to create places for community connection and shared commerce together. So specifically to the transportation system plan, so this is a state-required 20-year investment blueprint. It establishes both the policy framework that guides all of our decision-making, and then it also integrates the capital projects, asset management, project delivery, and various policies. And it's meant to match our forecasted funding together into being submitted as part of our comprehensive plan. It also establishes a financially constrained list of projects that then can be added into our capital improvement program and also into the regional transportation program. So it's a, while sometimes it feels like it's a long off sleepy process, it's integral for community members or for you if you want to see projects happening. The transportation system plan and the regional transportation plan is actually where the game is. Within the TSP, we're looking at overall system priorities. And as we talked about earlier, looking at prioritizing walking for trips 1 mile or less, emphasizing cycling as a safe and comfortable option for trips that are 3 miles or less, and prioritizing transit for trips that are 3+ miles is a way that we're helping the city ensure its mobility over time. We are also looking within the transportation system plan at connectivity and master street plans for areas that are developing, such as Gateway, making sure that as that district develops, there's local streets that can provide access. Also within the TSP is a stark reminder that demand management and parking policies are key to our growth management strategy. Parking and parking pricing, parking time stay management is one of our key strategies to make sure that commercial districts have ready access to customers and that we're incenting people to maybe own one less car to make up to make more space for others within the community. Within the current transportation system plan, we have 254 projects that are within the financially constrained project list and 77 projects that are outside of our financial constrained list. Making up our overall TSP major projects list. And so the map on the right is an illustration showing the lines and the dots for all of those projects.
Art, can I interrupt you just for a second?
Sure.
Can you just talk a little bit about what it means to be financially constrained?
For sure. I'll speak a little bit more in detail about the overall forecast, but essentially what we are submitting to the state is both existing known revenues and anticipated revenues, and those make up our overall revenue allotment, essentially. And we're matching up those projects into that financial forecast. And so it has limits, of course, to it. And so we end up with projects that are outside of that limit of that anticipated forecast that we aren't predicting we're able to fund, but are still important projects that we want to essentially have in the queue. And so at times we are making choices between key projects or choosing phases of projects. Also, this is an opportunity for us to look at our funding mechanisms and decide if we want to bring more funding to specific types of projects to be able to open up more opportunity for those financially unconstrained.
And is that constrained list dynamic? Does it change? Do projects drop off? Do you add?
With each update. So this is another, with this moment, we have an opportunity to look at the existing set of projects, remove those that we've already completed, and then potentially add in new projects to match up with our forecast.
Excuse me, we have one more question.
Oh, sure, then. Yeah.
So let's make sure that we understand financially constrained. That means that those are a list of funded and not funded.
Even very important. I might just jump. Well, give me a moment. I'll come to that in a second. Let me finish a couple of slides.
Okay.
I have a specific slide that'll help us understand that. Also within the transportation system plan are 10 program categories. That we anticipated about $316 million of needed investment over the next 20 years. And these are designed to make those quicker investments. A lot of them are the ones you're hearing about that we don't know all the details of to include them specifically, but we know the categories of investments that we want to make. And it allows us to be more nimble as an agency to respond to concerns around traffic safety, around pedestrian connectivity, around cycling connectivity. And so we have these 10 program areas, pedestrian network completion, bikeway network completion, improvements to neighborhood greenways, high crash corridors, safe routes to school, transit priority, freight priority, overall transportation system management, which is signalization types of changes, transportation demand management and parking strategies, and then alternative street design. So together, this makes up a large amount of anticipated need. Much of this has not been funded yet. That we would love to be able to deploy into community.
I hope you don't mind us interrupting you.
No, it's great.
It's a demonstration of our enthusiasm for this topic.
Exactly.
I think, Councillor Green, do you have a question that's germane to this part in the presentation?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Art, thank you. So I'm curious how and if, like, when we do a TIF district, Mm-hmm. How does that interact with the TSP?
I imagine there is a close connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. So tax increment has been one of the really instrumental funding streams over the years, mostly in helping match together with other revenue streams like system development charges. But the anticipation of whether or not we're going to have these tax increment districts was hard to forecast. And I think that's one of the new funding streams that we would be able to anticipate now that we have these new TIF districts formed, which we didn't necessarily know what the outcome was going to be in the 2018 passage of the last one. So I think it's a very important question.
Thanks. And then so, and I think, of course, the East Side is going to get a lot of new TIF districts and create, you know, resources to do that. That investment, but I'm also thinking about North McAdam, for instance. I know that, you know, there's funds left in that district, and I'm just curious if there are the upgrades there in that district that's
for sure
part of this plan. And
yes.
Yeah. So we have a I wonder if it's on the map. It's probably very hard to see, but if you look down into in the shaded area, the sort of the tail of this of Central City, there's a number of dots there. Those are key portal improvements to that district that are essentially unfinished business that are really key, particularly if we are going to be hosting baseball in that district. We're going to need to be making additional district improvements there for sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
They know well about these projects, so I appreciate your reinforcements on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great question, yeah. Councillor Green. Councillor Green and I are both very concerned about the tip of that district and yes. And what those projects are. Yeah. I want to ask you another question, just back up to the list of program areas. Yeah. Do you prioritize all the projects in each of those categories, and do they have timelines associated with them? And how do we access that kind of a list?
Oh, that's great. So on our website is a reference list for each of these program categories. And we have a program manager for each of those categories. So our pedestrian coordinator or our cycling coordinator would be the hub of those requests. And they're working with our traffic engineers to look through those requests. Some of them actually come directly from our 823 Safe phone line requests, and they get added and reprioritized every year to look at what we think are the top priority investments. This is one of the areas that we were faced with reductions in the last couple of years, but we were able to get some PSEF funding for some portion of this, and also Safe Routes to Fixing Our Streets funding for some other portion. So some of this, we're not by any means doing it at this level, but some of these programs have been able to continue on with those one-time sources.
Thank you. I can imagine that some of my colleagues here are very, very interested in what's in these categories,
yeah,
and that we may want to at some point revisit these in greater detail.
Sure.
Thank you for bringing these to our attention.
That seems great. Yeah.
Excuse me, we have one more question.
Oh, sure.
Councilor Oyama-Lane.
So looking at this list of citywide programs that still need investment, are these part of the 77 projects that are unconstrained, or are they part of?
They're actually neither. So these are the major projects that are listed here. So these are all projects that are mostly above $2 million is roughly the scale in which these become, we end up with major projects. And so these programs were a way of capturing the sort of myriad of smaller investments that are always needed. And so they're not listed, they're actually separate, unless my colleagues kick me. Am I right?
They are, I think, separate from the count. Yeah. We'll double check on the funding, and I should introduce myself, I guess.
Kurt, can you come up to the
dais
and introduce yourself?
Yep. Great. For the record, Eric Hesse, Supervising Planner for Policy and Regional Planning. Team has responsibility for the TSP, working with Art and leadership. And so I think we'll double check to confirm that the number is definitely separate from these program areas. I just want to double check that $1 billion estimate, whether it includes that funding or not.
That's fair.
And I'll just note that also in the 2035 TSP, there are also other major projects, some of the ODOT highway expansion or improvement projects, TriMet projects, things like that are also in the list. These are particularly ones funded and led by PBOT. So we just wanted to articulate that as well.
Gotcha. Do you have a follow-up?
No? And okay. I think a continued reiteration along, I think you should stay up.
I can do that.
A continued reiteration along this. This is planning money rather than actual secured funds for much of these areas. So we are predicting the capability on some of these projects, but then we are projecting the need and trying to show how with some additional investment that could be anticipated, such as a passage from the state legislature or further investment from this body, we could do more of these projects. And so there's a space in there that is always that gap. And so particularly for these program areas, these are areas that we're continuing to really pursue the funding for, more so than we have the funding to expend, other than those couple key programs.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Grounding a little bit more into the transportation system plan, you'll see that what I just highlighted in orange is the area of the transportation system plan that is those modal plans, various where the street classifications, the master street plans, all the project lists go. But then you'll see that there's an overlap with the city's comprehensive plan, and that's where goals and policies, our project list, and the finance plan lie, because that's part of us demonstrating our compliance with the overall comprehensive plan requirement each time we're in periodic review. So maybe I'll sort of go slowly here for a moment so you can see below each of the transportation system plan are each of those modal plans, as well as neighborhood and over area plans, neighborhood street plans, and other plans. All of those feed into the transportation system plan, and there's a new snapshot with each of these updates where the most sort of relevant and up-to-date council adopted information is all within the transportation system plan. And so what we are in right now is an update to that specific zone. There's also been a lot of conversation over the last year around the regional transportation plan. So I think it's important to highlight that that's outside of our transportation system plan, but we are feeding into that with our adoption of the TSP. And then we are participating in each of those RTP updates. So the RTP is brought together by Metro, jointly approved by JPACT and Metro Council. And it's a process that Metro is leading that is for both Portland and all of the other jurisdictions, as well as state agencies that have projects within the Metro area. And this is federally required and updated every 5 years. And we're in kind of mid-cycle right now from that last update. Their last update, I think, was in 23.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. And so we are submitting our project list to those areas into that overall and conversation. And they are part of what helps us determine what is our overall allocation of funding is in conversation with around regional resources. Again, important to note that projects and programs need to be in the RTP's version of a financially constrained list in order to receive federal funds. We've had moments where we have discovered a new priority project and realized that it wasn't in the RTP and had to go through an RTP update in order to be able to pursue or get federal funds for those. At the regional scale, so this is an example of the policy framework for the last RTP, you'll see that it has broader goals such as the 2040 growth plan, also their version of centers and corridors that are receiving emphasis. And it is including a lot of the same policy objectives that we share, such as equity, high injury network, high capacity transit network, different efforts on congestion management.
Excuse me, Art, let me just ask, Councillor Smith, do you have a question you want to ask now?
Thank you, Madam President. I can wait until he's finished.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Green, you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you go back to slide 24?
Yeah, okay.
Thanks. So when I look at this, there's a lot of intersecting plans and processes, and I guess I can appreciate how if a proposal comes forward that's not on the prioritization list, it can maybe potentially throw a lot of things out of sync. But I wonder, what's the binding, like what is the master overarching authority when I look at this diagram? Like at the end of the day, I mean, there's state planning goals, but we have the Portland plan, the climate action plan, the Portland comp plan, we've got the TSP. So what is our sort of North Star if we had to sort of default on like a single guidance directive?
I think a lot of the state planning goals, which are governed by DLCD, I think I would think of as the overall North Star that is guiding us. Luckily, it's a star we're already aligned towards and heading towards. So there's, I guess, less tension than there might be. But we are needing to demonstrate compliance with all of those state goals with each of our submittals. And there's a review process that they do and might give us feedback on that we're out of compliance, depending. Does that make sense to you?
It does. That's very helpful. Art. Thanks.
Can I just add on one other observation there, Art? In the future, I think it might be interesting for our committee to have a parallel chart to this that shows the money flow.
Yeah, totally. You know,
what comes from the federal government through the state government to our region, to our city, how those dollars, where they come from, how they get distributed, and their relationship, maybe an overlay to this document.
Yep.
I think that might be helpful for us to be able to track where the money comes from.
Mini version of it in this show, but I think we could go a lot.
Okay, perfect. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
No, this is good. You are you're on the right track. One of the new things is there's new state requirements that were just passed in the last couple of years. That include additional requirements around public engagement and equity principles. Also a requirement that we are demonstrating no per capita increase in vehicle miles traveled. So that is a pretty significant requirement that we're gonna need to demonstrate that in total, our plan is able to accommodate that requirement at the state level. And there's a state required performance measures around safety, equity, and climate. That we'll be needing to use to prioritize our projects along with you to demonstrate that our plan is in alignment with those goals. There's also additional state requirements now that are further pressing on us to demonstrate financial constraint with our project lists. The early TSPs were able to be kind of a dream list without as much constraint. And with each successive update over the years since the early 2000s, there's been more requirement for reality even in the plan, which is healthy. It allows us to really weigh the trade-offs and make sure we're making our smartest choices. This requirement, which is, I think, new at the state level, is that in order to be in the capital improvement program, a project has to also be in our TSP. And that was something that was sort of a best practice, but maybe not a core requirement for
it. And maybe just briefly note one nuance there, that not all operations and maintenance ongoing things need to be in there necessarily. So this is more the capital improvement type of projects. So just wanted to add that slight nuance.
Yeah. So we are undertaking the next of these journeys when we waited for you. We wanted to make sure that we had a new council on board and kind of have your sea legs under you before taking on this new journey, because you're going to be instrumental in helping us with this process. So we're just now starting up this month with some of the process. So we're working through now overall developing the engagement plans. What are the overall vision and goals for the planning process? Looking at existing and future conditions, and then also starting to look at revenue scenarios. So we're sort of preparing all the back preparation work. And then later this fall, we're going to be starting to looking at various scenarios, essentially, that we'll be then working through with you. And then heading into next year, looking at refinement phase of working with both this body, as well as a technical advisory committee and a community advisory committee, to work through revisions of some multiple drafts.
Can I interrupt you here?
Sure.
So TAC must be technical advisory committee.
Yeah, technical advisory
committee. TAC is the community advisory committee. And can I ask you, how does one get on the community advisory committee?
I'll get there in a second. We have a slide.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You are right in alignment.
Forgive us.
So in terms of this 2045 TSP update, we're focused, of course, on ensuring compliance with those state planning rules, including the updated rules, wanting to work directly with you and the entire city council and the public on making sure we're understanding what are the most timely and critical needs, looking at any existing goals and policies that need refinement, and then going through the process of updating the project list, which is always a pretty substantial effort, of course, because both community and business, as well as council members, care deeply about what investments we might be able to make. This, I think, will continue to daylight a structural deficiency in terms of how we are funded as a bureau. And it, particularly what's becoming, I think, more and more obvious is without a base funding for our operations and maintenance, we're further and further challenged to even produce these new quality investments. And so that we need really base funding for the bureau for us to be able to even begin this journey. With there's additional state guidance and direction around equity analysis. PBOT was already ahead of the game and has already been working on a history of racism in Portland's transportation system. We have a report that is coming together or maybe is ready.
Yeah,
mostly ready. And then the exciting thing is we have a video that we'd love to share with you at some point and potentially might even invite you to a broader viewing that we might do at a public venue, just given I actually have not seen it yet, but I've heard it's amazing. And Director Williams said she cried, which is not, does not happen that often. Yeah. So I think it is, I think it's something that we probably all want to be sort of grounded in as we're heading into this next conversation. But so this major equity analysis is required as part of the OAR, but is something that we have already been well aligned with as a bureau. So this is a demonstration of what we did at this point almost 10 years ago, which is crazy. Well, 8 years ago, maybe. But as for the last TSP update, we took all of the TSP candidate projects, so all the projects that made it into our TSP from modal plans, from area plans, and from other community requirements and requests. And you'll see this was an attempt to demonstrate it as sort of a gumball machine. So each of these bubbles is the size of actual projects that were in the last TSP. And then we were working them through a variety of filters, looking at safety, economic benefit, equity, neighborhood access, climate, health, cost effectiveness, and public support to then sort into three categories. First, into constrained and unconstrained, as we already spoke to, but then into a 1 through 10 year list and an 11 through 20 year list. And so that's where the choices start getting harder, but it's also helps us really focus in on our priorities as we're pursuing grants and other outcomes. So we'll be doing a similar exercise this time. As we already spoke a little bit before, the transportation system plan is relying on funding to come into reality and to turn into a capital improvement plan. And as we're looking at the transportation system plan, we have sort of ongoing predictable funding streams, such as the state gas tax. But that's primarily used for operations and maintenance. Less than $2 million a year of our general transportation revenue goes into our capital improvement program. It's mostly the rest of these categories, such as system development charges, funding that we passed with the fixing our streets, and then our ever nimble and optimistic planning team is always out applying for federal grants and pursuing new funding and new solutions for all of these needs. But those are tenuous. So in the TSP, we need to project sort of how much optimism and tenacity we think we have both as a bureau and as a council to pursue funding solutions for these projects. Federal funds are a key part of our overall funding, but most of that goes to the state DOT and is only shared through a couple specific programs down to the local level. So funds that we, regional flexible funds allocation, or RFA, is one of those key categories that we're each round every couple of years are pursuing 3 to 4 projects maybe. And then there's also federal competitive grants such as FTA Small Start, so that would be for something like the Montgomery Streetcar extension, or the Reconnecting Communities Grant, which we did receive funding for Broadway and Widler, and then Safe Streets for All, so safety projects. We have 122nd and a couple other projects, but those are very, very specific one-time applications. So for the most part, it's the state funds and local funds that are really carrying us. However, as I said, good planning and project solutions does lead to more investments. And so we forecasted some possible solutions within the last TSP, and some of them came to be, such as the fixing our streets. We've passed, I think, twice now since the last TSP. We have a heavy vehicle use tax that is a companion to that. The Clean Energy Fund has proven a really instrumental revenue stream for supporting our programs in particular and also our projects. And then really through a lot of collaborative work with the state, we were able to fund the transition of 82nd Avenue from a state highway to the city. And I think we should anticipate that there might be more of that in the future, but of course would need state funding to help make that be. For this next process, so we have a community advisory committee that has been selected, and their first meeting is coming up this week, June 25th. We have 31 members that applied to be, I think we had over 100 applications.
160.
160 applicants. So this is a popular committee to be on process on. I haven't yet introduced her, but Francesca Jones is the project manager for the effort and has done an amazing job with recruiting a really wide variety of people from various backgrounds and interests. And so that committee will be advising the PBOT director in particular and the TSP project team on how to navigate through the process and giving us feedback on what the technical analysis shows us. Chair Steph Ralph from the Planning Commission is the liaison to that committee and will also probably be helping us with some of the communication with you as well, given her formal role. All right, last slide. We've been on a journey. I appreciate your patience. So we are anticipating four steps for our engagement process with you. And so this is sort of our first stop along the way, but plan to check in with you at key milestones through the vision and goals process, through the development, and then the refinement processes. So both as formal briefings and then also happy to go on deeper dives with you all as appropriate. All right, more questions?
Thank you, Art, and thank you, Eric. All right, colleagues, this is our chance to dig into this. It's a lot of information to digest, a complicated web of relationships. I think we're tracking. And, you know, we've got three members of this committee that either have had or do have a relationship to JPAC. So this is really valuable information for us, and we're all... And if you follow the committee, you know that we're very interested, we're very engaged, we're very interested in safety, we're very interested in the future of our streets and our asset management in particular. So, Councillor Smith, you had your hand up. Would you like to go next?
Thank you, Madam President. Madam Chair. I don't know if this question goes to you or DCA Donna Paul. But one of the things I was concerned about is our SDCs. Yeah. And there's apparently $63 million that will be foregone if we waive the fees for the new market rate housing that's going to be built. And so I was looking at this, and it sounds like $27 million less for parks, $22 million less for sewer and stormwater, $10 million less for transportation, and $4 million less for water over 3 years. So in terms of us creating our TSP and contributing to the RTP, how will that impact us in a way that we can still do what we need to do going forward? Or is that going to be a problem for us as we create these plans?
Well, this is a long-term plan. So in terms of the transportation system plan, I think we would anticipate that SDCs would still be a key resource over the life of the plan, the 20-year period. In the short term, it does produce a challenge in terms of our ability to use SDCs. Mostly we use that as matching funds for externally funded projects. And so, for instance, for TIF districts, we often would use SDCs to match TIF funding. We may be more reliant on TIF funding for those near-term projects because we won't be able to bring as much match necessarily. So we're continuing to look at our project list as we're trying to anticipate what the trade-offs might be. But I think we are ever, tenacious in our approach of pursuing additional funding from other sources. So if SDCs can't be as robust in the near term, we're going to work on adapting to finding other ways.
Yeah, I was looking at a editorial this morning. Someone was talking about the SDCs that we're going to forego, and that was going to have a huge impact on what we're doing in terms of our planning. Who on PBOT sits on JPAC?
It's the mayor, and then I think Chair.
Are there any other like PBOT personnel that, or is it just the mayor and the commissioners? Is there anyone else who pays attention to this? Yeah.
So there's a technical staff level called TPAC, the Transportation Policy Alternatives Committee, yes. And I represent the city there.
Okay,
good. And then we work to coordinate with the JPAC representatives.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Koyama-Lane.
Thank you so much. I feel like I'm getting to dive in and learn a lot. Can you go back to the slide that showed the progress, like the mm-hmm. timeline, the yep. process schedule is what it was called? And just, can you confirm exactly where we are? Are we at that first star?
Yeah, here, Eric, you can answer why. Sure, yes. The intention is that's that first star, sort of at the end of our groundwork, which we as a team have been pulling together a lot of information, have been working since January with our technical advisory committee, which is staff across various bureaus, as well as neighboring jurisdictions and state agencies and TriMet as well. So they've been kind of getting the material ready, and then we're shifting into the public process starting this week, as we noted. So, yes.
Okay, great. And then I found a website that goes even more in depth with all the TSP documents and just wanted to confirm to see the full list of all the projects. Is that going, like looking at Appendix A, is that all of them? Everything's
yes.
there? Okay.
Yeah, and we also have an interactive map at portland-tsp.com. So that's another place to be able to interact with, and we're happy to follow up with all these resources to summarize
that
for you.
And that certainly is my preferred method when someone asks me, you know, is there a TSP project here? Pulling up that map app is really, really quick, and you can click on and get the background data on all the projects. But I'm also a visual person, so I like being able to navigate that way.
I think I found the one that you're talking about, the pdx.maps.arcgis, that one?
I think there's a version that's within our PDX Maps world. We built a separate one, which also integrates more of our functional classifications and networks, as well as the text of the document. So we have a specific website we built just to be interactive around the transportation system plan that we'll direct you to.
And for these, when you click on them and it says estimated time frame, if it says not applicable, would that mean that it's one that is
unconstrained? That's the unconstrained list.
Okay, great. And then you talked a little bit about new revenue possibilities. I don't know if you're able to go a little more in depth on that. It seems like an important thing that we need to talk about.
Absolutely. Yes, I think that's constantly an effort both for our team as well as within the director's office of making sure that we're sort of lifting up those needs for capital investments. We always end up with, I guess, choices between that and maintenance investments. But in the end, I think one of the key things for the Bureau right now is the core foundational funding. And so we both have an active conversation at the state legislature, and then we have a continued conversation here. One of the, I think, key highlights, if you look at transportation system planning and all the things I've been talking about, you might notice that it's hoping for a less reliance on the automobile. You will also notice that our primary funding streams are through gas tax and parking. So we have a structural challenge. The city administrator described us as intentionally driving ourselves out of business, right? So we need your help with that structural challenge. We need to shift our funding streams reliance, just as our personal choices reliance, away from driving in order to be a successful bureau. And so looking at us as a utility that is funded by sort of all households is one of the key philosophies that I think would be really important. And this is when I knew the director might appear.
Yeah. Good morning, Millicent Williams, Director of Portland Bureau of Transportation. Thank you so much for having the team here this morning. I didn't want to jump in as Art and Eric are fully capable of handling this conversation, but as relates specifically to future funding for the Bureau, one of the things that we shared with this committee and with the full council early on January and February was our overall funding picture. And we talked about how much of our budget was restricted. And then we spoke specifically to the amount of funding that goes to the capital improvement program. I will share, and I just wanted to highlight this because I didn't think that Art was going to brag about this as much as he probably should. The planning team is probably one of the more impactful and effective fundraising, grant award winning teams in the city. The CIP, the Capital Improvement Program, is largely funded by grants. $600 million over 5 years, but on an annual basis, working with around $250 million. Did I say 1,000? I meant million.
Yeah, we have about a 10-to-1 leverage ratio with our use of local funds versus external funds. So yeah, we're constantly fundraising, yeah.
And so as it relates to the general funding for the Bureau, and again, I know we're gonna talk about this probably ad nauseum over the course of the next 12 months because budget season starts July 2. I look forward to working with this committee and full council to help to identify ways that we could look at a more sustainable funding that does remove the reliance on that fossil fuel funding that right now is the major engine for our budget.
And just moving ahead, at our next meeting, this committee on July the 7th, will know at that point what the state legislature has done with their package, which is a very diverse package, moving away slowly from the gas tax. But we'll get those results before the 7th, but we'll discuss it here on the 7th. And let's hope it's good news. Did you have another question?
Just to clarify, because I hear the language, like work with council, in order for us to move forward with thinking about some other ways to get revenue, it needs to be driven by council or by electeds. Is that?
Together with us.
Together? Okay.
Yeah, it's the executive and the legislative. I think that from the policy perspective and putting forward notes and recommendations about how you would like for us to move forward, it is important for us to receive that guidance from you. But of course, we must work first in lockstep with the mayor and city administrator as relates to the broader funding picture that we seek to draw.
So it would be more of a conversation or an ordinance?
I know that the mayor is very interested in pursuing alternatives here, and we'll have that conversation with him. And I know he'll start with his agency people or bureau people and then include us at some point.
Great, thank you.
We certainly have robust background information that we'd love to work through with you to deliberate on what's the best type of solutions. So.
Councillor Green, did you have a question? Sure.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, so as we kick off and we head into this 2045 refresh, how does this intersect with like the housing production strategy and some of the other kind of transit-oriented development? Because as I see it, you can't really solve what you want to solve without being in lockstep with our housing strategy.
100%. No, very good question. That's why the transportation system plan and the comprehensive plan are so intricately overlapped. Is the the best transportation strategy actually is a land use strategy. If you're able to create thriving dense communities where the things you need are nearby, you don't need to go as far to go to work or to school or to recreate, those kind of things. And so the various land use and development strategies, we need to continue to emphasize. Luckily, we have many, many years of that integrated thinking. And so the locations where we have our major project lists, those are emphasizing already those commercial either centers or corridors. And so, but I think as we see more and more activity happening in those areas, we're going to need to bring more improvements, at very least more pedestrian crossings to a busy street that's the hub of a commercial district. As that district grows more and more, more easy access to walking and cycling to that location from a mile or even longer out, so you're able to easily walk there, ensuring in partnership with TriMet that there's good transit access to that center. So that's a competitive choice. All of those things, if we're not doing it well together, we're chasing longer and longer distances with harder and harder solutions.
You're speaking my language. I really appreciate that. I think when it's important for us to talk about this in relation to the system development charge discussion, because I think Councilor Smith, you raised a really good point, which is that if we're going to waive these fees, and I've been a champion of that, of course, but there's an opportunity cost to that. But the way that I think about it is, if that is successful, then we'll see that increase in housing production, which will then create new ratepayers, will create new property taxpayers. And so there's the sort of, I think the director said it's, we're thinking ourselves more as a utility, or maybe you said that. Yep. And when utilities expand their rate base, you lower the cost pressure for everyone. And so I think as we move forward, if we get past the point where the SDCs, it's a temporary time limited thing, but if it was very successful, we might consider a version of that rolling forward. But at that point, we really need to think about, I'm very curious what the mayor is going to bring on the question of how do we pay for infrastructure in a post gas tax world? How do you then leverage that with bond issuances as a stable revenue stream? Because then we can start to really make hay while the sun shines on this bigger list, and then drive forward in this integrative TOD approach.
Absolutely. And I think, one of the great opportunities that we have in terms of the shifting of our structure, in terms of having a public works and having PBOT and parks and water and BS together in a public works, is that we are thought of as a shared utility offering, providing a set of services. One of the structural challenges we have now is, while a lot of the things we do creates vibrant communities, that produces business license tax and property taxes, but those streams are not designated towards PBOT. And so we are we're a contributor to the system without maybe having some of the built-in mechanisms that help us with the co-investment over time. And so I think you're absolutely right. As we're thinking about this at a higher level, structurally, how do we create really thriving urban communities? We need to really wrestle with that structural funding challenge, for sure.
Thank you. And then just the last point, I suppose, as we do the public aspect of this, yep. I suspect you guys will hear a lot about plazas.
Yeah.
Preserving what we have and then expanding that. So I'm really eager to see how great. Plazas fit into this broader plan.
Speaking my language as well. Yeah. We do have a presentation, I think, planning to come to you in September, I think, if I'm remembering right, to go more deeply into the Plaza program. But you're absolutely right. Certainly in cities all over the world, as you're creating more vibrant, dense communities, and especially if you're creating less space in your each apartment or each house, you need more and more space for people to be connected outside together. And I think it has economic implications. It also has social implications. If we're thinking about being an interconnected community who sees each other outside and being less sort of stuck in our own bubble and algorithms, it is in those public spaces where maybe there's music happening and there's kids playing that you're having really human connection. And I think that's instrumental to Portland's next chapter, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Art. Councilor Smith, did you have another question?
Yes. Thank you. So I have two questions. You had mentioned something earlier about making sure that people get a chance to get out of their cars and move about around the city. But I can tell you that in District 1, that is a very long district, and it is going to be hard. And I don't know what your idea or vision is for how people can move around in District 1, which is East Portland, yep. and what that looks like. I know that going north to south is a bit of a problem. We're trying to speed up what we do on 82nd. Right. And then if you're talking about the east to west, those are very high crash corridors that we're speaking about. So I'm just curious, what were you thinking, or if there are any thoughts yet, sure. on what it would look like to move around. If we had a chance to wave our magic wand, what could we and would we do to make it easier for people to get around?
Absolutely. Well, I think we're probably continuing a lot of what we have already been doing, which is ensuring that transit and pedestrian access is safe and comfortable where it can be for shorter trips. You're right, for some of our streets, we are doing transit priority to try to make it faster and more competitive to work. I think it's important to note, and we have even in the transportation system plan, that each district, each environment is different, and the strategy needs to be different for each environment. One of the maybe sort of unexpected attributes of having the inner neighborhoods maybe be more able to transition more quickly to someone being able to get around through transit or other ways,
right,
is it's making space for someone who has a longer trip, that it's harder to make that adjustment. And so we are going to need to be sort of constantly making that shift together. It does, of course, depend on where you're trying to go. You know, a lot of the East Portland attraction is to the Columbia Corridor. And so making sure that we're providing good, reliable access at all hours of the day to those workforce jobs in Columbia Corridor has to be one of the kind of strategies that we're offering up to make sure that it's going to work.
So I want to give you paint you a picture of East Portland. 40% of our K through 12 youth live in District 1.
Yep.
And you said something about trying to get people out of their cars. Right. A good number of those people are taking their kids to daycare in the morning. And so it is really impossible for them to bike or to take a bus. And so we have to keep that in mind. And so I want you to think about those young families who are trying to get around. And that is an impossible way to travel with a youngster. Having done that before, sure, I know that is a challenge every morning. So if we're encouraging that, I mean, I think we need to have a strategy that that is for you're probably going to have to do a neighborhood strategy for different people, because getting folks out of District 1, out of those cars, that's going to be tough for at least 40% of the people. Right. And we don't have transportation for kids to go to high school as well. And so school districts are constantly talking to us about getting funding because sidewalks are an issue. And that's going to be my next question. Yep. Getting those folks out of those cars, how do you get kids to school?
Right.
And so that's an issue. So I just want us to think about those things when we make a blanket statement that we're trying to get, you know, people out of their cars. That's going to be difficult when you're talking about equity and diversity of people. Certain people, particularly moms, they're going to have a tough time.
Yes.
Director Williams.
Yeah.
I was going to, thank you, Councillor Smith. I was going to allow Art to answer the question from the TSP perspective, but one of the things that I wanted to share is part of why it was important for us to have a diverse committee representing the different interests of all types of stakeholders and community members within the city was because of just what you've shared. And something that we recognize as being a challenge, as Art has mentioned, is every neighborhood, every community is different. And one of the things that I often bring to a conversation is, well, what about? Well, what about? Well, what about? I know what our goals are, but there are things that require a certain lens and perspective that should be incorporated in the planning of our overall system and our overall plans that we are challenging ourselves to do.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we recognize that is a challenge. And I myself have said, here's why I don't. Or here's why I wouldn't. And this is based on my lived experience, not just as a single mother at one point, a mother of color, someone who lived in an outer part of town. This is before I moved to Portland. These are the reasons why I would not. The bus might not be fast enough. A bike is not necessarily a tenable solution. And I know that people figure out how to create the opportunities that they need to move their families about safely. Our responsibility as the Transportation Bureau is to ensure that we are making sure that every mode that folks are using is safe and that they have the opportunity to make a choice to do something different should they have the opportunity to do that.
I appreciate that. And you may want to stay here because there are a few members on this Transportation Committee that are co-sponsors of my resolution called SIP. It's the Sidewalk Improvement and Paving Program. And I was going to ask you, and I am going to ask you, how does that program, we We separated it in two pieces. One is the non-revenue piece that passed, just to give you all direction to come up with a plan on how to improve sidewalks in District 1 and District 4. The second piece is going to be coming along here pretty soon. And, you know, I was really pie in the sky, but I thought it was the level of investment that we should take to move this along. I was thinking of a $400 million package. And I don't think that's going to happen.
But I love your
story. I'm looking at Councillor Green, but I think it'll probably end up being half of that. Would that project, if passed, the revenue piece, if it passes, would it be a part of the TSP project as a major project that PBOT would be putting forward and then put it in the RTP and all of that?
A portion of it, probably yes. So
okay.
My understanding of the overall program is some of it would be small maintenance oriented types of investments. So these are things that are being done by our maintenance crews to add in segments of sidewalk, but it's not deemed a major project type of investment. So those probably wouldn't be included in the TSP, but as we're using this as a source, for instance, for sidewalk projects that are already in the TSP, perhaps, mm-hmm. we would want to acknowledge that funding stream as we're doing this.
Well, yes and no. This is not just going to be maintenance. This is the project to right. build and right. to make it safe and to put barriers up on streets and sidewalk areas that haven't had them before right. to make it easier for our families and our children to walk to school, to walk to work, and just to walk in their neighborhoods, whether it be for work or play. Yep. So I would think that just the number alone would actually put it into the TSP.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Council Smith, if I may, the program as we are envisioning it, while we talk about maintenance versus a capital project, for example, right. We speak to maintenance from the delivery arm. It's not necessarily that it is a maintenance program or project,
okay.
but that the maintenance operations team, based on their ability to field fit and go out immediately and do work
okay.
On a block-by-block basis,
okay.
would be able to help to meet the objectives of the program. Some of the larger, more comprehensive projects that would require multi-step, often multi-year planning efforts mm-hmm. would be something that would be more readily directed through the TSP or a part of the TSP. So there's going to be, and you'll hear more about it perhaps
yeah.
this afternoon as the
final. I'm going to understand the language mm-hmm. here before my term is up. I guarantee you. And when I thought about maintenance, I was just thinking about maintenance of the current existing.
No. It's the maintenance team based on the type of work that they currently do.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I also wanted to have another opportunity to talk about SIP and how important it's going to be, not just for our community, but for our region.
Absolutely.
Because we butt up against state streets and highways, and I think it's just really going to be a fantastic way to invest in areas that we have not invested before to this degree. So
I think, you know, your two questions are very much interconnected, or the two topics. And so I really appreciate you both helping us with the problem statement and coming with a solution so quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about each transit rider, they start as a pedestrian. And to be a pedestrian, leave your house and have that be a logical choice, you need a sidewalk that is safe and comfortable, a pedestrian corridor that's safe and comfortable. So if we're going to try to support TriMet's, you know, service and support, you know, more people taking transit, it actually starts with a sidewalk investment. That's the first step, a pedestrian crossing. Those various things are what remove some of the barriers of why someone would say this does not make sense, or this isn't, you know, I don't feel seen in this network. And so absolutely, sidewalk investment is instrumental to all of these follow-on steps.
And I think, you know, one of your slides said, I think it was 27% of Black residents don't have a car.
It's 40.
It was on earlier.
40%, actually.
What was the 27%?
27% of Black households do not have access to a car. Yeah, 13% of white households.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And so And that part right there, that is also another layer as we're looking at things and trying to figure out how do we help people move around just in their neighborhoods.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's also one of the things that within the transportation system planning, we're looking at many trip purposes. So one of the trip purposes might be to go to work. One might be to go to worship. One might be to go shopping. These various things, each of them have a different destination. And I think the more we're able to create a complete, you know, local network through sidewalk improvements and pedestrian crossings and safe cycling facilities, it's allowing one of those trips, perhaps, maybe it's just the trip on Saturday to right. be taken a different way, where the other trip is still the only logical choice. It's certainly if you're driving to Washington County, you know, for work, it's very hard to produce a good alternative to that trip for somebody.
Right? And I think the other issue is, so Preschool for All is, they have what, $480 million in reserves right now over at Multnomah County. And I think if we're having conversations with them, we need to identify Preschool for All opportunities in East Portland, because people are driving in to take their kids. And so there are opportunities for us to build daycare, Preschool for All. And so I just want us all to be really thinking globally on how you're talking about new monies coming in. That is a source of new monies. I think they're going to have to build some, they just don't exist right now.
Totally. You know, I think, you know, again, as we're looking at complete communities, mm-hmm. daycare, you know, food, worship, these various things that are close by, that could be close by, creates a complete community. And you're absolutely right that childcare and child services, if they're not provided locally, you're going to have to travel much further to go and get
them. Right. In our gateway, we have a lot of empty storefronts, and we have a lot of stuff that I could see that we can turn into a Preschool for All, a building or something to be able to give us some density as it relates to opportunities to take your kid to preschool.
For sure.
Well, that is all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for your work. I appreciate it.
Councillor Smith, I thank you for that observation. I think it points up that there are so many opportunities for partnership between programs, funding sources. If we could pile all those together, we might get a better result. I appreciate that. Councillor Koyama Lane, did you have a question?
I do, but Councillor Smith said so many great things. I want to discuss some of them. First, I did just want to say, Councillor Smith, I'm genuinely so glad that you're on this committee. I think it's important that we have a voice of someone from District 1 on every committee, but especially for this one, I really appreciate what you're saying and what you're bringing forward. I know last summer I was in District 1 at a playground and then took my kids over to McDonald's for a little treat, then visited a friend's house. And even just like moving through that space, it really, I could feel it, what it was like to have my kids, and it felt scary crossing in a few places, and there weren't sidewalks. And so it made me think about conversations that I've had with Director Williams about us as a committee maybe doing some field studies mm-hmm. together and going out and seeing some of these spaces, seeing some of these projects in action too, I think is really powerful. It's one thing to hear your perspective, but I think it would be good for us to actually go physically feel it if we have some time to do that. And I love that you're bringing up Preschool for All. I think oftentimes we can think of like county, city, but really the average constituent is like government is government. Figure out how to work together. And I would love to think about ways, even though this is something that's technically housed within the county, how can we as a city help incentivize more preschools to open up in East mm-hmm. Portland? What are ways that we can support fast tracking some of that? And as someone who had my kids with me as I was collecting signatures to get Preschool for All on the ballot, it's something that I do care about and would love to collaborate on, and also know that it's something that we have. I mean, I remember 5 years ago saying it was just an idea, and I said it would take about 10 years for this to fully roll out. And so we have to make sure that we are invested in making sure it can fully roll out and not kneecap it before we get to that place. Okay. So then my other question and comments come from a few different conversations that I've had, and I think things that a lot of us up here value, which is are these street plazas. Heard Councillor Green talking about those, and I've heard him talk about them in interesting ways too, of thinking about, we have a lot of maintenance to do. Are plazas something we can be doing more of as we're thinking about that? Hearing Chair Clark talking about community partnerships and bringing in the community more, and then knowing that a lot of us up here really do care about eliminating traffic deaths and injuries. Had a constituent come speak to us and email us about tactical urbanism, which I hadn't heard that term yet, but it's something that I think a lot of us have kind of been talking about, maybe without using those exact words, which is just opportunities for community members, businesses, grassroots organizations, other similar entities to lead and even fund some interventions within the public right of way. And so I've only done a little bit of looking into this. I know you all know a lot more, but I'm just wondering your thoughts about this topic, whether it's technically tactical urbanism or this just this idea of working with community to make our streets safer and more vibrant.
I'll jump in. The theme for my team this year, the projects policy and planning team, is enabling co-creation. So we had a retreat at the beginning of the year, really focused in, and I think this, creating with community is instrumental to that. Really wanting to make sure that we're thinking through moves big and small that can be done together with community or done together with business, business groups and other entities. And so you're absolutely right. Tactical urbanism is like the easiest step along that journey, is how can we identify a street location or street space that doesn't need to be as large as it is, or doesn't need to be used for traffic movement? And how can we have a conversation on what would be another use? And so plazas are one of the examples in which we've had a lot of successes with that. We also have our Lita Triangle and other areas where we are creating community space. And we do have a team, a public realm and plaza team, that is set up in exactly that way, combining both the team that is creating plazas proactively and also the community use permitting team, which is wanting to engage in those specific conversations about what's an alternative that we could do either just for a weekend, just for a day, or for a whole summer, or permanently. How can we look at converting street space for sure?
And regarding the tactical urbanism, and I heard the comment, I believe it was last week when the gentleman brought it forward, about what's happening in other countries and other cities around the country. We are supportive of that, as Art has mentioned. The opportunity that we have is to make sure that we are working with community and helping to move nimbly so that we can move quickly. I think what we find often is that there is some frustration with the pace with which we're able to move. And so we find people with pent up energy and excitement about doing something, and will potentially go out and put things in the right of way that are well intended, but we then have to go back and make some modifications to or adjust. And so that creates a little bit of discomfort, as you can all imagine, but the opportunity for dialogue for how we can best do this, as has been mentioned, in partnership. But we must make sure that as managers and stewards of the right of way, that we are creating the safety that's important, and that we aren't trading off safety in one space for safety in another because of people's frustration, anger, angst, or even excitement. And so we have a tremendous opportunity, as I've shared with Art and his team many times, now is the time to look at how we can do things differently, as has been mentioned, whether it's a weekend, a season, a pilot, something that can become a permanent installation, get people used to some of the change. As I mentioned in a conversation months ago, one of the hardest things about our job is helping to steward in that excitement about change in community, and helping people see that it's not a threat, but really an opportunity to reimagine our communities and see them as we'd like to see them. So excited about that.
One plug for a partnership between Better Block, Portland State University, and our team here is there's an annual call for proposals. PSU students help with developing the projects, both planning students and engineering students, and then the PBOT team helps with tactical urbanism, tests of various projects. That type of experimentation is what has brought us Better NATO, actually the transit lane just outside the store. Those various things came from that kind of ideation together. And so I really appreciate Better Block and PSU in that partnership. So.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate the openness to collaborate and think about ways that we can be more nimble. And that's what I've experienced in my conversations with you all. And I'm really excited about this idea of things that can be piloted or, you know, used temporarily. And to kind of like when Councillor Green was asking, oh, how long would it take to make the plaza happen? I think for some folks, a year does seem long, even though that might not feel long. And I understand that there's a sweet spot in making sure that things are well planned. And so if there's anything that we can do to help make sure that some things can move along quickly, but also make sure that that boxes aren't left unchecked and things are still safe. I think at least I am very interested in collaborating however possible.
Terrific.
The mention of it taking a year, that was around right of way and needing to vacate spaces. There are plenty of places where we don't have to do that. The Hawthorne Plaza is one where it only took a couple of months for us to move from, well, there was a lot of community conversation, but there did not have to be a process by which we came to council to get permission to vacate a space to then activate the space in a different way. We have that as an opportunity. And so when we find out about those things, we're excited about them. Hawthorne's Plaza, at 37th, is it? Mm-hmm.
That's the latest one.
Yeah, that's our latest and greatest one.
And I guess if you hear of ideas, as a former project manager, I'm always counting the months back. Now's a great time to start conversations about what might happen next spring, next May. So if there's conversations and people want to, we would really be happy to get that conversation happening so it doesn't feel like an emergency and we can really work through the steps through the winter and have it ready to bloom with the roses.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just to kind of bring this to a conclusion, I think today's presentation has been incredibly grounding. We've all learned a lot. I'm certainly shocked when I hear that I think you said 30% of the land area in Portland is streets. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
That's rather astounding and gives me some pause, especially when we think about the fact that we're so far behind in asset management and in taking care of those streets. So many of them are failing that we've had some informal discussions among the committee members here about how we could convert those spaces. I know I was at the Charette with Director Williams, were you there too, Art?
Yep,
sorry,
yep, yep.
About a week ago. And Eric, I'm sorry, a lot of people there. Looking at all the downtown streets, Flanders in particular really struck me as a street that could be greened or whatever they called it. But I think there's a lot of interest on this committee to look at alternatives like that, not just plazas, but other ways of looking at these assets, because it, as Councillor Green has reminded me, this is a long-term liability. Will we be able to raise the funds over time to really maintain 30% of the land space, the streets? That's kind of amazing. Anyway, to conclude here, it's been a great presentation. I know we want to do more of this. It's been a great discussion between my colleagues here. We really appreciate all the work that you're doing. I'm just going to suggest that, I don't know if my colleagues are interested, but we may want to be put on your mailing list for your CAC for what's coming up. We can track those meetings and some of us may even want to go to a couple of them. And I love the idea of some tours. We'll work on that with your help. So thank you so much for being here today. It was a great presentation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So colleagues, in the few minutes we have left, our next meeting is July the 7th. And as I said earlier, we'll know at that point what's happened with the transportation package in Salem. Fingers crossed. It's a big package. It means a lot to us. And on that meeting on July 7th, it'll either be a really happy day or it won't. And we may be having to discuss other kinds of issues that day. I just want to let you know, too, that we've got quite a few other topics planned for our future meetings. We're going to have a meeting on the One Water Integrated Management Plan with the Public Works Service Area. In August, we're going to be bringing back the mega projects, the IBR, and the Rose Quarter projects, take another look at those. We're scheduling time, as Art said, with the Plaza program. Perhaps phase one on the service areas CIP investment plan. And we're going to want to get an update progress report on the asset management plan that we've all supported as well. So we have quite a few things scheduled. I'm happy to meet with each of you individually to talk about those or also to glean your ideas of other things that we should be putting on the agenda to track and to have input on. So, and also on the 7th, we'll be talking about the Public Utility Board. There's a couple of appointments that are coming. We'll hear a report from the pub. So without other comments, I'll adjourn the meeting of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.